Welcome to a podcast of Tax Tips for Authors, presented by Scott Lowden, President and CPA at Lowden, Fraze & Associates, PA. This podcast was recorded at the 2010 Text and Academic Authors Association Conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota. TAA is the only nonprofit membership association dedicated solely to assisting textbook and academic authors to enhance the quality of textbooks and other academic materials by providing them with educational and networking opportunities. For more information about TAA, go to http://www.taaonline.net.
My name is Scott Lowden. I run a CPA firm in St. Petersburg, Florida, and we're going to talk about tax tips for authors. Question, how many of y'all actually have corporations set up? Got one. How many file Schedule Cs? All right, we're going to go over the differences and see if you can actually save some money by being an S-Corp. All right, we're going to start with the different type entities. You can be a Schedule C, which is just a form that gets filed on your personal income tax return. It's a business form. You have a S corporation, which when set up creates a liability protection. It gives you, it's a separate entity from yourself. It's not, you now work for your entity. There is a setup with the IRS with this. There's a formation with the state. You send in forms to the IRS. They give you approval. They give you an EIN number, which is an employer identification number. And they give you a subchapter S status, which in the tax world we call a pass-through. It has income come in, and it goes right back out to you. It's just, we'll get into it a little bit later, how it actually works. There's a partnership, or as if you or someone else joined together, by default, you create a partnership for the IRS. This has tax ramifications, and it's also a way you can distribute money that comes in. If you have partners and you want a different type allocations, where someone gets, you know, 80% of the revenue, someone gets 20%, you can do those with a partnership. With S Corp, it gets a little more difficult to do that. It goes by ownership percentage. And then, as everybody's probably heard, is an LLC. Now, an LLC, for tax purposes, is not a true entity. It is a state-created entity that gives you liability protection, mainly for sole proprietors. Okay, for the IRS, an LLC has to file as either a Schedule C, which we call a disregarded entity, an S-Corp, partnership, or C-Corp. So does anybody create an LLC that files a Schedule C? Nobody's an LLC in here at all? Here's your question about those of you that are just a Schedule C. I would kind of ask you, you need to look into maybe becoming an LLC at a minimum, because it will give you liability protection if someone wants to sue you for, nowadays, any type reason. They can come up with a lawsuit. The LLC gives you protection from that, to where they can't get your personal assets. They can get whatever is in this entity, this LLC. So it's very easy to set up as far as your tax filings. There's nothing different than you're seeing now with your Schedule C. It's just you have a level of protection against people that would want to sue you. There are requirements when you create an S-Corp to where you have a board now. You're required to have annual meetings. There's more documentation that goes along with a corporation than if you were just an LLC filing as a Schedule C. Profits in your Schedule C, as you know, basically you probably have one account. Money comes in, you pay your expenses. The rest of it you live off of and pay your personal expenses. With a S-Corporation, the money comes to that corporation, and you have to get the money out somehow. It's no longer your money. It belongs to this corporation. Yes, you own it, but you have to get it out by either payroll or by what we call distributions. And that, as in a partnership, if you had other owners of your corporation, it goes by your ownership percentage. So if you own 60%, you can take 60% of the profit out. Okay, if you're a partnership, you can do your allocations based on whatever you want. There's not a set ownership percentage where you got to distribute it this way. It goes by the partnership agreement. As a Schedule C, you can take it out when you want. With a LLC, if you have, let's say, two of you in the LLC, if one member passes away, that LLC stops right then. It's kind of like a partnership. It's dissolved immediately upon one of the members leaving. With an S-Corp, it goes on indefinitely because, let's say you pass away, you own the percentages, you own the shares, it gets distributed to whoever the beneficiary is of that person. Tax advantages we're going to get into here in just a few. As you know, with Schedule C, your main tax is the self-employment tax that hits you at the end. And with the S-Corp, there's ways you can lower how much self-employment tax you actually pay. Deductible expenses. Does everybody ever come across questions whether that's deductible or not, or can I deduct that? Seems to be a question we get all the time. You know, what about this? Can we, you know, I deduct my dog or my trip to Hawaii? We're going to go through some of the general expenses. Office expenses, supplies. I always tell my clients, anytime you have a expense that is remotely related to your business, go ahead, take it as an expense. If we get to preparing the return and it looks, you know, a little iffy, we'll back it out and we'll tell you we're probably not going to take that. Equipment, printers, phones, big screen TVs, if you use those for your business, all types of equipment. If you lease, sometimes you lease copiers. Let's see, let me ask you, does anybody have employees that work for you? Or is everybody kind of on just themselves? Employees? That works. Get the group health insurance. Equipment leases, software used in research and production. You can expense this if you have to have a special type of software. Subscriptions and magazines, all that can be fully deductible on your Schedule C or your business. Dues and licenses, which we tend to pay a lot, 100% deductible. Communication expenses. In this category, we put telephone, internet, your VoIP, any type of iPhones, the data plans, all that can be 100% deductible. Yeah, usually we just deduct the whole thing. If they come in and want to allocate it, you can allocate it. Sometimes you have different people on your plan. In general, you just deduct it through the business. You can do a percentage if you need to and back out maybe 20% personal use, 80% business. Your business mileage. This is one of those areas people get into the vehicle and can I depreciate my vehicle? It's easier to do a mileage log. You get 55 cents per mile. You can either deduct your actual expenses for your vehicle or you get the mileage reimbursement. So if, let's say you lease a car and your car's $6,000 a year is the lease and you have some maintenance, you can deduct that $6,000 plus, let's say, $1,000. Let's say you get $7,000 in auto expense. You have to back out your personal use of that lease. You can't take the 100%. A lot of times, if you don't do a lot of traveling with it, maybe your actual use is 30%. You get into different rules where you get very little. We will tell people, if you just do a mileage log, it's much easier to say, you know, I did 10,000 miles, this is where I went. If you do get an examination, it's not going to be a question. When you do come across IRS examinations, I don't know if anybody been in one of those lovely situations? A couple of you. It's all about documentation at that point. It is a fine art to get through what they want and make them happy, because mileage log, you have to produce a mileage log. They'll say, well, you know, how'd you come up with $8,000 in mileage expense, vehicle expenses? It's easier if you have something to produce and say, well, here's my log. If you have nothing, you get into the situation where they will pull expenses out and it creates income for you. And then you get penalties and interest on top of that.
Well, FedEx drop trips too, keep track of it. We have almost 300 miles of going to and from the FedEx place.
Yeah, and that would be part of your log. He said FedEx, you know, if you go to the FedEx for the Dropbox. Any type, you know, if you run down to Office Depot, that's business mileage. If you go out to a park to do research, that's would be considered business use of your vehicle. Health insurance premiums. With a Schedule C, which a lot of you are, you'll notice on your tax returns the health insurance is deducted on the first page. You get a above-the-line deduction for health insurance. When you're a corporation, if you have employees and pay for the health insurance, you can deduct that 100% with employees. If you're an over 2% shareholder, there's some different rules you get into, but it ends up nowadays coming through on your Schedule A, which is your itemized deductions, a lot of it. They've changed how you can deduct it, especially this past year. And there's some requirements, not to bore you with the tax law, but it has to end up on your W-2, and you can take it deduction through the business, but then it washes out on your personal, and it's government in action taking away our benefits. Travel expense. If you're doing research for books, and if you're, say you go to Europe, if you go wherever, and you have a business purpose, you can deduct your travel, 100%. Meals and entertainment fall under a 50% rule, but if those meals actually have a purpose for maybe what you're writing about, it can actually be 100% deductible. It's not all a meals and entertainment. There's an actual purpose for having that meal if you're writing about a restaurant, I guess, critiquing it, those type deductions. Research expenses. Do you all get into a lot of research where you accumulate a lot of cost up front in writing the book, and then the book comes out, gets published, and you start getting money on the book? Do you know there's certain rules as far as the research expenses where you can't take them all right then? Has anybody ever mentioned that? We'll get next couple slides. There's some research we call, anybody ever heard of UNICAP? Section 263, where you have to allocate your cost. This is going to be educational for everybody. How many take the home office expense? Everybody fills the form out. The home office expense, as most of you know, you can take your mortgage interest taxes you typically get on your Schedule A anyways. You get a deduction for that. You get into your utilities, your maintenance items, repair items. All of those go under the home office expense, so you do get a deduction. Now, it's based on the percentage use of the home. It's not a full 100%. You have to have a room that is dedicated to it. Now, a lot of times you'll hear, well, we got to have a separate door in that room, and it has to be, it really just needs to be a designated area that is strictly for your business use. And you take that square footage, take it by the whole house, you get a percentage. So let's say your 10% is your home office. You get 10% of your utilities, of your homeowner's insurance, flood insurance. All those expenses then go to lower your Schedule C income. Now, if your Schedule C income is at a zero or a loss, you don't get the home office. But as long as you have income, you can get that deduction for it. Just talked about those. The house, what you pay for the house, now becomes a deduction too. You can depreciate it, which basically means over 27.5 years, you get to deduct this percentage of the house. So if your house is a $200,000 house and it's a 10% business use, you get to deduct $20,000 over the next approximately 30 years, which is not a huge deduction, but it's something to lower your income. Does that make sense? Yes.
I heard conflicting reports that using the home office expense deduction, sometimes I hear it's fine, and others say that it, I forget what the exact issue is, but I'm not recommending it, but I think it's something to do with when you sell the home. Does somebody know about
it? It's called, what happens is when you depreciate that percentage of the house, it now becomes a business asset. So when you sell the house, you have 10% of that house that is really a gain, because you've expensed it over those years. The home office is a, I don't particularly like, I'd rather put the expenses under other categories, because it's a separate form. A lot of times you're fine using it, but it is an abused form too. A lot of people, it's a part of the living room and they take it. But you do, when you sell it, have to pick up that portion of it. So it's...
We went to a house.
No, it usually doesn't. You really don't have problems until they actually look at you. So that's it. We always say everything's deductible until the IRS comes in and tells you it's not. So that's all right. Here's the research regulations. There's a code section 263A where the IRS has tried to take the expenses you have and match them up with when you actually receive the income. So you can't get $20,000 of expense now and your income's going to come down the road. There's been variations of this rule. What they came up with is this notice: you can take 50% of those deductions the first year. The following year, you can take 25% and then 25% after that. So you get the full 100% over a three-year period. Because this would match, theoretically, with when the income is going to come in. Yes, sir.
But when an author who's writing, already has a book published and is now working on the second book, that sort of disappears. We're applying the 263A in practicality.
In a practicality, yes. In the real world, a lot of times 100% of that expense is taken the first year.
Only because you've got your income from book one. You're working on
right.
Book two, you're expensing, and you're expensing your book two expenses. I don't think the IRS is ever going to use that
in IRS. No, and if they did come in, it would you'd have to have a pretty savvy auditor that would know these rules.
And it's a timing issue,
right? It's all timing. Same with depreciation. That's what I say. It's all just the timing. Whether you take it first year or you spread it over 5 years, it's the same expense. And you're right with that, because if you're already getting, if you're already getting revenue from book one, there's no reason why you should spread it out. Because you could argue, well, look, I'm already generating revenue. I'm going to take the full expense because I incurred this already. So that wouldn't be so much of an issue. The thing we like to hammer home is documentation, documentation, documentation. That's the key. When the IRS comes in, it's even a key when you're getting your taxes prepared, because it helps us to get a full picture of what you're doing. If what we get in preparing the return is just a few numbers, it's hard to extrapolate what you did. A lot of times, you know, in our meetings when we meet with a client and we go through kind of the year and what happened, if they don't tell us these little tidbits you did during the year or have some type of documentation, it's hard for a preparer to know what you actually did and if you're missing expenses. So documenting is an important part of your kind of everyday. And since you're writers, it shouldn't be that hard to write a couple lines about what you did, especially if you travel. If you travel or do research for a book, to have a log of what you've done would serve wonders if you ever got examined. Royalties. A lot of time royalties come and people will put them on a separate Schedule E. These royalties can end up, they should end up with your ordinary income. They should be part of your business income. If you're an S-Corp, to have all this income directed to the S-Corp is very beneficial, because then, as you'll see in the next couple of slides here, you're not going to pay self-employment on all that income. And the self-employment tax is really the big tax that gets us. Sometimes if you are an S-corporation, you will receive your 1099s or K-1s, and they will be in your personal name. What you have to do, and you can have your preparer, is it becomes an in and out on your personal return, and then it flows back to your corporation. It ends up coming right back to you, but it's just a paper trail to pick it up in the corporation. Retirement savings, does anybody have, those have businesses, do you have your 401k set up through the business? Have you done that? Or everybody knows about the IRA. You can do your IRA amounts based on your income, your Schedule C. SEP plans, you can do through the business, which you can put more away for retirement, and you can defer your income. And you can also do 401k plans when you get the corporation set up. And with some plans, we can actually defer close to $50,000 a year away. Granted, you pay tax when you take it out, but you can defer it in the current year. There are options, too, with a 401k. You have the traditional 401k. You invest in mutual funds, stocks, or you can have self-directed 401ks, which allows you to invest in maybe rental properties or certain interests you may have. You can direct that retirement money. It earns money off that. The gains stays in that retirement account, and all of that money is deferred until you start taking it out of retirement. So if you, let's say you're getting income, currently have an income, and you want to invest in real estate, you can create a self-directed IRA or 401k, start buying that real estate, which you own because you own the retirement plan. These investments, as they grow, you sell, buy and sell, the gains they get stay in there. You're not paying tax on those gains until you actually start withdrawing it at retirement at your income level then. All right, here's this graph will show you the difference between the Schedule C income and the S-Corp. And if you've got questions as we're going through this, just raise your hand. Yes? No, it's really, it's on the tax return form. There's a difference between where the cash actually, how it flows, or the reporting. We will report on your tax form under other income. We'll show that income coming in, and then we'll just show it going right back out. Technically, the cash, when you get that check, you should write a check to your corporation, and then the corporation distributed it through payroll or through distribution. Yes, Paul? Right, that's a trick. And sometimes it's hard to get them to, it takes them a while for them to get their records updated so they're actually writing to the business, not to you personally. So and what you have to provide a W-9 to them with the business name, the business EIN number, and they should be good to go. And that's, when you're negotiating those, if you can, the more you have everything going to the corporation, the better. I mean, technically, everything should be in the corporation name. Now, in that instance, you could probably draft up a document, you know, stating, well, this entity will not write a check, you know, at me as an employee, I'm working for the corporation, documentation. It's always better to have everything written in the name of your business. Sometimes it's not possible to do. We still show it going through the business. With IRS too, a lot of times, if that's the way you've been operating your business, that will pass with them. You know, sometimes people set up businesses, they operate them like an S-Corp, they just don't get the S election in. Well, by default, they've become a C-Corp, which the C-Corp is going to pay income taxes. There's some revenue procedures where you can go back and hopefully get it changed, but one of our arguments is, look, we created this just because they didn't know that this form was out there, they've still been operating this way. And, you know, most of the time you're okay with that if that's the first year. Now, if it's year five and you've been wanting to switch, it gets a little more difficult. All right, this example, let's say $150,000 is your revenue. General office, travel, research, accounting. Accounting typically goes up with your corporation just because there's more returns and more forms. Payroll, if you notice, Schedule C, you don't have payroll. Okay, in a business, you have the payroll. Total operating expenses, $42,000. Is your net for schedules, total operating expenses $42,000, $92,000 for the S-Corp, and your difference is going to be the payroll and the payroll taxes. Yes? Are you a corporation or a Schedule C? S-Corporation. What we do with the S-Corp is, and we'll kind of get into this, you kind of tell yourself what your reason, the IRS says you have to have a reasonable salary. That's the only guideline they give us. Now, a lot of people take no salary, and that is just a red flag because they can come in and recharacterize all the income as self-employment income. So what you need to do is you come up with a number and say, like in this instance, at $150,000, we're going to say $45,000 is salary. How we come up with it is just kind of a comfort level. You know, we can say, okay, what you actually did was worth $45,000 in salary. The rest of it is kind of just on your knowledge, not as the employee, but as the business owner.
Is it okay if you didn't have a loss in the S-Corp?
Yes, because it's still flowing through your personal. Like, let's say you had a loss of, you took a salary of $50,000 and you had a loss of $25,000. Really, you made $25,000 in the business. You've just taken a deduction for the salary on your business return. On your personal, which net income wise here, 108 for the Schedule C, 58 for the S Corp. If you notice on here, when you get down to it, your taxable income is about the same. You know, it flows differently from the business versus a Schedule C. But it stays your gross income that actually you get taxed on stays about the same. If your net income from a Schedule C, for those Schedule C files, $108,000, right off the bat, you have self-employment taxes, which is 15.3%. That's your Social Security and Medicare. Above the line on your personal return, you get to deduct half of it. So you're probably aware of that. So you do get a little deduction. Your adjusted gross income is almost $100,000. Now with the S-Corp, your net income from the business, which comes through as a K-1 form, is only $58,000. But you also have a W-2 now that shows up on your personal return for $45,000. So your adjusted gross income, which is AGI, is about the same. Everybody with me so far? Itemized deductions, which is your mortgage interest, property taxes, exemptions, let's say that's $20,000. Your taxable income in both scenarios is about the same. And if your effective federal income tax rate was 22%, your income tax is about the same. The kicker comes from the $16,000 in self-employment tax you still have to pay as a Schedule C filer. Whereas if you had a corporation, you don't have any self-employment tax. Okay? So your total taxes due at the end of the day are $18,000 if you had the S-Corp versus $34,000 with the Schedule C, which with the S-Corp you save about $11,000. That's including the accounting fees and some of the other deductions. Yes, Paul?
Say $45,000 in wages.
Mm-hmm.
As an employee, you're not going to get 35 because you're going to have half of the payroll taxes deducted.
Right, above.
Prior, you're going to have to receive 45.
Correct. And you're getting that deduction on the corp for that half.
Right. But in terms of cash flow, you've got to come to a different.
Cash flow, yeah, well, the cash flow in a lot of areas is different than the actual forms. And cash flow, sometimes we have people who, they'll do distributions throughout the year. Let's say they'll just take $6,000 in distributions every month. They don't actually do any payroll. The payroll is just a reporting function that we do for them, and they just submit payroll taxes. They don't actually cut a payroll check every month. So it gets reported as if they got payroll. But the actual cash flow never shows up as a pay stub where you get Social Security taken out and all those expenses. Anybody else questions? That's it. What I thought I'd do now is just open up, if you all have tax questions that pertain kind of particular to you in your scenarios, I would say if you were Schedule C, the kind of our ballpark is if your net income is over $30,000 after your expenses, it's probably worth looking at becoming an S-Corp. Because you can save. And with the deferrals for retirement savings, you can really push a lot of income. Yes?
I think you will talk a bit more about retirement savings, because when an author is an academic or has been an academic, you've got the situation very well where there are retirement plans in place as the employee of the university or college or whatever the school system. But the S-Corp allows that same person to take his or her royalty in and build a huge retirement in addition to the college pension.
Right.
So if your cash flow from your salary is handling the bulk of your living expenses or a good chunk of it, you got to really concentrate on, wait a minute, I've got a money tree here that I can put away a huge chunk. I mean, one of the things that I know authors have done is take the real step and go to an actuary and get a fully fledged benefit plan where you can make a lot of money disappear into that pension.
Yeah, and those aren't used too much anymore, but with the right scenarios, you can put a lot of money away. I got Paul on the payroll too for my presentation, so.
More than just doing a Schedule C?
Yeah, Schedule C, you're limited. You're really limited to what you can put away. With the S-Corp, you can get into these defined benefit plans. I mean, you can... Yeah, there are lots of options. Yes? Right, you put the spouse on the payroll. Especially small businesses, if it's just, you know, husband and wife, I mean, basically everything you're doing is for you anyways. So, you know, with the health insurance, with the retirement plans, you can, just for the 401k, you can get $50,000. You know, you start doing these other plans. And granted, there are calculations because your payroll taxes go up. There's more expense to it, but, you know, if you're in a 35% tax bracket, I mean, it's huge, you know, to defer that money down the road. It really just takes some planning. It's yes?
I have a question about some deductible expense.
Okay. You're not telling me that. It's all business.
And then likewise, you know, I pay for my internet connection.
It's all business. In the examinations we've been through, they have not been that picky. Usually it's bigger items. It's sometimes meals and entertainment. You know, a lot of it is how it relates to the rest of the income. You know, if you have $30,000 in income and your travel's $40,000, you know, if things look funny, those are the issues that come up with, yeah, those type, and it's such a small number that, you know, whether if it's 50% business, 50% personal, you're only talking an expense of, you know, maybe, well, with a phone, let's say it's $5,000 a year. You know, at the most, your tax, you know, $1,500, $2,000. So it's not a huge number.
But that's the answer. I think it's 4552 or something like that, 4560.
That's the depreciation.
Yeah. You depreciate annually. You buy your computer, you put it down there, you say you're using it for 70%, it's for business, and then that's how much you count it in.
Right. Typically, we'll put it as 100% if it's for business. And a lot of times, if it's under $1,000, we will just expense it. We won't even put it on, like, a fixed asset schedule. That's kind of...
You're saying $1,000 is a cutoff.
That's kind of our threshold, because with corporations, too... You get into a tangible tax, so the counties will tax you on physical assets you have. So if it's under $1,000, a lot of times we'll just push them through office expense. Yes?
I just want to make a suggestion. I do not work in the state of Delaware, but my corporations are in the state of Delaware. Mm-hmm.
And Delaware actually hides who the owners of the corporation are. It's one of the few states that do that. So some people create entities in Delaware. Same Nevada has some rules like that where we'll create things out in Nevada. Yeah. Now the trick is too, when you set up with the state, there are still forms you have to file with the IRS. So just setting up with the state does not give you an S corp, or, you know, that just gives you a entity in that state. Any other questions? In that state, you can go on their website and you create...
If you live in New Jersey, but you're going to incorporate Delaware, I mean, I understand.
It becomes a... Well, to Delaware, it's a foreign corporation because it's created in Delaware, but it actually operates in a different state. It's more... The clients we have that done that is because they can't trace who owns the corporation. You want to add something, Paul?
Well, even if it's a domestic corporation, you live in New Jersey, you form a New Jersey corporation, you still have to deal with the federal government at the time you set it up.
Oh, right.
The S corp election and the getting the employer ID number. The other operating wrinkle that you've got to remember is that if you set up an S corp, you don't deposit your royalty check into your personal account.
Right.
You gotta have a bank account.
Right. Yeah, once you get it set up, you get that EIN number, you take that to the bank, you get a bank account in that business name. And from that point on, everything goes through the business. That's a key point. You don't, because you start commingling funds, or you, and it just creates a nightmare. Record keeping is a nightmare, and the IRS kind of frowns on it when they come in, because then to them, you don't really have a, you're not running as a business. You just set this shell up.
I'm treating my income as royalty income, and I collect Social Security for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe if I set up this corporation, I'll have to pay Social Security tax continually. Is that true?
You have Social Security tax, and then depending on age, it could affect how much they actually, they can reduce your Social Security if you have other ordinary income. We've run into that.
If you keep paying into Social Security, they'll reevaluate the amount you're getting paid. As well.
They do, but if you're actually drawing it out, they could reduce the amount. Yeah, I mean, they could reduce the amount that they're paying out to you because you now have other income. Well, once you get over a certain age, right, but.
But if you're still paying in at the max rate, they will increase the amount they stick
in. You get your additional quarters in at higher rates. So it's something to look at. You just don't want to go blindly and then they adjust it on you. So we did have that happen where a client had additional income come in. They reduced his Social Security income the following year because he had a large increase this one year. And then the year after that, they brought it, you know, they increased it back up. But because of that one year, he had this additional income. And it was a sale of a business is what happened. So they actually came in and...
Going back to earlier, when you talked about the difference between the LLC and the subchapter SLA. The only difference you gave between an LLC and just filing on your Schedule A is that...
Schedule C,
is that you have limited liability.
Right, it gives you some protection.
An LLC, then, in effect, you're a limited liability corporation, but you're still filing everything as if you were...
Your filings don't change because the default for an individual is a sole proprietor. You're Schedule C. That's, if you set up an LLC, the IRS doesn't see that as anything different than what you're doing.
All it does is protect you from any lawsuits or anything like
right.
that.
Right. But the trick...
It makes sense for most of us as textbook authors, but it makes sense for somebody who has a retail store or anything else where somebody can trip and fall and sue you for...
Yeah, you never know. I mean, you write a book and someone takes that the wrong way and... But the trick is when you create that LLC is that your income goes to the name of that LLC. So... Yes.
I don't have a specific resolution, but you have to have the filing law. Do you recommend, is there a certain limit or a certain amount that you recommend?
Kind of the rough note is about if you're netting over $30,000, it becomes beneficial. Because you can start saving on self-employment tax and get into other areas. The reason when it's lower, because you do have additional accounting fees, you have filing fees, so you have to offset those expenses with some type of benefit. Yeah. Now, he has a business that employs you?
I have a business that employs me. So, should I work that through the business or should
that be personal? Well, I guess it depends. Now, are you talking about like creating a business for you or just running your income through that business?
Through my business. We both have
them. If you both have them, then you should have your own company set up.
Right. No, I didn't.
Oh, well, I'd probably stop that. I mean, there's no, since you have your own company, there's not really a incentive to do. I mean, you're just paying payroll taxes out of that company too then. So I don't think I'd do that. Yes. It's no, but they do on the 1120S, which is the corporate filing.
Yeah, but
the the odds are, unless you're unlucky, it has recently, they have stepped up the examinations because I think everybody's looking for money. So they have, you know, we have seen an increase in IRS notices and looking at things. But, you know. Pretty much, yeah. Well, their new thing now is we've had two. They've come in saying we're doing an employee examination. But in that employee examination, they're pulling out the whole general ledger and every other account going through them looking for. So, you know, most recently when we had a smaller corp that had two employees, and they've had two employees for the past 10 years. And they called it an employee examination, and now they've extended it for 2 years going through all the detail. Right. There are, especially if you get into where you have contract labor, if you have contract labor, say you sub out some of your work to someone, if you don't issue 1099s, that's a big thing they look at, because you'll have subcontract or outside services. They can match that up with the 1099s that you reported. So it's very important to issue the 1099s. Because that money, too, can come, those expenses, they can reclassify if you don't have the right documentation on that. And it's a true expense to you. It's just you have to send in the forms on that to get it logged in.
I sent some money to a fellow in Malaysia in order to check over my house out. Do I have to report that also in that form?
As an expense?
Yeah. How would I pull that off?
They wouldn't have a
wire transfer tool.
Careful your wire transfers. That's right. They regulate those. What we would do in that, we had an instance where we had a client to contract work over the Middle East, and they had a lot of expense. We just had documentation for it. They actually bought equipment. They paid, you know, a lot of the Middle Eastern people for these services, and we just documented it. I mean, it hasn't been looked at, but there is nothing over here. They don't have social numbers. They don't have, you know, ITIN numbers. There's nothing but your documentation. So, you know, and that, you probably have something. You can say, yeah, I paid $5,000 to... Right, so...
Now, the SEP this year was a $49,000 cap.
That was, yeah, and that's based on, like, 25% of your wages.
So does the IRA have a cap?
The IRA is $5,000. If you're over a certain age, it can be $6,000 for an individual retirement account. That's all you can put into an IRA.
That's all.
Right.
So the SEP is higher?
Yes. SEP, 401k, those are all, you can put a lot more. The IRA, you're limited to just, you know, your $5,000 a year.
So just another version of Keogh plan, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's all. It's just... based on 25% of your income. So, you know, if $100,000, you can put $25,000 into the SEP. So it's a pretty easy calculation and defers that money.
Now, when you turn 71 and a half or whatever that magic can blow up number, does that change anything about the S-Corp or LLC? Or?
No, because you're still paying self-employment tax. I mean, they don't give you a break just for aging. Yeah, all that stays pretty much the same. Now, with an IRA, I believe if you reach a certain age, you can't fund that anymore. You kind of run out of doing that.
The so, S&P, you still can, right?
You can still, right, you can still fund that.
If you're on Social Security and drawing retirement income from some other, you can still be putting money in.
You can still, if you have defined benefit plans, some of those plans you can still do, right?
Minimum distributions at a certain age.
Well, the RMD is a whole different matter. When you hit that age, they require you to start pulling money out of your retirement accounts. That's where the required minimum distributions come from. And that's different than putting money away. So, yeah, you can do both. So, any other questions for anybody? It's exciting stuff, isn't it? It can be. I mean, it's taxes are something we all have to deal with. So, you know, it takes a little... With a real planning, you can save some money, you know. And I would, you know, sometimes the do-it-yourself works, but a lot of times, you know, it pays to hire someone that actually deals with it all the time and can, especially if your income's getting up there, you know. You can't know everything, so. What's that? Depends what you have done. I mean, it can go, you know, smaller S-Corp tax returns, you know, probably around $1,000. But then, you know, we've had some where we charge $15,000. You know, just it all depends. You know, but for a standard, $1,500 estimate's probably safe because you have payroll returns now. So every quarter you got a payroll return, you have the W-2 you got to issue. There's the 1120S tax return. Sometimes you got tangible returns. It just creates more. You know, and usually you're going to be meeting with that CPA to talk about the business. Because the business clients we will meet with, you know, usually quarterly. Because if something's going on, it's always better to know before the end of the year than after. Because we get a lot of times they come in, you know, March or February, and you start looking at it and say, when did this happen? Oh, I did that back in July. I'm like, well, that'd be something that, you know, been nice to know, because now we're kind of stuck. So communication's the key, as with everything.
This conference is deductible.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, deductible items are anything that relates to the business. I would go ahead and I always tell the clients, just put it down there as deduction. When we're doing the return, we kind of go through it, and if things look funny or it starts getting weighted too much on one side, we'll kind of back them off. You know, because every now and then you'll get such a large amount of expense, and even if that expense is legitimate, it kind of gets out of the comfort zone and say, why don't we just back that down a little bit? You know, you're not losing much of a benefit, but it just looks a little out of whack. So that's kind of a judgment call.
Thanks,
all right, thank you. Y'all enjoy. Absolutely.
Tax Tips for Authors is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.